This is Bitcoin Audible, and you're listening to a Guy's Take episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And I wanted to get into something today. I actually really hunted for a good piece on this to read, hoping to just kind of have something to work as a base off of. But I have had, I've had no luck really in finding a piece specifically on this topic. So we're just going to get right into it. But I have had a number of conversations recently. I had a pretty lengthy discussion with somebody on Twitter about this, which then sparked a couple of private discussions. And I couldn't believe, well, that's not true. I could believe, but it still surprises me how much confusion there is over the idea of human rights, of what is a right and what is not. And what even a right is by definition, like, what does that mean? There's a lot of confusion. It seems to me that there are many, many people think that a right is just something that we really need. And that has absolutely nothing to do with a right. A right is something that we all have naturally. And it's a sort of moral imperative. And you can derive them. That's kind of the basis of a lot of the Austrian school of economic thought, is like, from an individual rights perspective, what can we actually derive from the simple truths of the world, that I own my body and I'm the one that moves my arm. Nobody else thinking that they can move my arm right now is able to do so. I am the only one in charge of that. I clearly am the one who experiences the pain and the joy and the consequences of my body and what I am doing in my life. Therefore, who could possibly have a greater claim over this one single scarce time that I have on this earth than me? And that same goes for everyone else. So the idea is to, how do we avoid conflict as best as possible, and in such a way where we can all come to the same conclusion about this, that we can have this base understanding as to how we should treat each other and how we can essentially not get in each other's way when trying to live our own lives. That is kind of the foundation for figuring out what rights are, for trying to derive them in the first place. But then critically, those rights that we figure out, those rights that we kind of derive, are a basis for how we morally explain why something is wrong, why you shouldn't do something, why it's bad to murder somebody or rape them or punch them or, you know, beat them up or whatever it is, or to trap them, to cage them, to take their life away from them. It is that very basis for which we have an argument for why those other things are wrong. And I think a lot of people don't realize, and I think it could just be a basic misunderstanding when you hear the connotation or the context of rights as things that we need, or things that would be really nice to have, like healthcare or an education or a decent salary or, you know, whatever it is. When you start to conflate those things as quote unquote rights, and you just hear that language over and over, you actually get into an extremely dangerous territory. It's really easy to just not realize what a right is versus a want, or a maybe we should have, or, you know, whatever it is you want to call these other things that are not rights, but are something that we need or something that we want. But as soon as we're contradicting those base rights, the fundamental arguments for why something is right or wrong in the context of moral, what we are actually doing is contradicting the very grounds by which we explain why something like murder, rape, or horrible violence against a person is wrong. And suddenly it's entered into this ridiculously subjective and impossible to have a an objective like measure, something that we could actually all agree to or find some sort of measure of, sense of need as being whether or not you can excuse those things. That the subjective need of any individual becomes whether or not it is morally right to steal or beat or murder or rape. And these things aren't loosely connected. These things are fundamentally dependent on each other. And in thinking about this and trying to figure out how to explain this and what a right is versus a want or a need, how Bitcoin plays into this, is that Bitcoin actually presents a fascinating analogy as to how to define and understand rights. It's actually a great way to explain it because Bitcoin is kind of a system of rights, a system of finding this lowest common denominator of how we treat and enable everyone to have a baseline that is totally fair, that is perfectly equal in how it treats everyone on the network, etc. And in that, there's actually a pretty profound analogy for what rights are and how to explain them. So that's what I want to do in this episode. I want to really get into what a right is and how Bitcoin is actually a pretty profound shift in how to understand and enforce those basic rights, or how to manifest them in the real world. Because Bitcoin itself is actually an extension of the natural rights, and it's a great way to actually illustrate what makes something a natural right in the first place. So we'll get into that kind of in the second half of this. But the first thing we're going to do is try to define rights, like define a right. But before we do, I want to just thank our sponsors for the show here. Obviously, all of our wonderful patrons. So many people have, you know, just shown up and supported the show and have joined in the crypto economy or the Bitcoin Audible Telegram crew, and always have so much fun with you guys. And I just want to say thank you because you all deserve it. And if anybody wants to join in, please feel free to donate if you want to support the show, or you can become a patron with the rest of the crew at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy and just hit me up. I'll, you know, toss you a link to the Telegram so we can all hang out. We just, you know, do crazy stuff, talk Bitcoin and Austrian economics and all sorts of fun stuff. But then, of course, our other sponsor for the show, Hexa Wallet. This is a really great non-custodial Bitcoin-only wallet. And as I've said previously, it's also got pretty familiar language and a basic setup so that for someone new to the space, can intuitively get the levels of security without having to know like a single sig versus multi-sig and two-factor and all these other Bitcoin terms. And another way they kind of make it friendly to noobs in the space is that it is a seedless wallet. So don't forget to check them out at hexawallet.io. Or of course on the Google Play or Apple App Store. And if you ever have any questions or want to add me as a contact or as part of your backup, please feel free to reach out. I would love to. So thank you guys. And of course, thank you, Hexa Wallet. All right. So let's start with our foundation of this thing. What is a right? And how do we think about this? Now, I'm not talking about this from you know, 90% of the population could not know what a right is and think it's totally different. And that is not the context which I am coming from. I am going to explain what I know a right to be and what its original definition and meaning are, what it is in the context of the Constitution and the reason we're having this in a political context. Because as soon as we leave that definition, we no longer have a way to discern what is a need or what is a want versus a right. These are very, very different things. And if we don't have a term for it, right, a right is the only term we have for the foundation of the moral argument. A need and a want is a completely different discussion. We get absolutely no benefit from changing the definition of a right to something that feels better. So what is it? First, it's universal, which means that we all have it at the same time. And this is one of the fundamental things that makes it non-contradictory and why you can actually derive it. If I can only have it at the expense of someone else's, then it's not a right. Either you and I have it, or neither one of us has it. Now, obviously, not everything that is universal or can be universally applied is a right, but every right must necessarily be able to be applied universally. It is a universal thing by its nature. Also, it is something we are born with. A right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the control of our own lives and our own bodies, these things are rights because the second we come into this world, we have them. They are assumed ours. And by doing that, we avoid a lot of violence and conflict. You know, my body, my choice. If we actually applied that principle, we could have avoided a whole lot of terrible things. And the fact that we now seem to not derive, like not make sure we go back to the fundamental objective. Well, you could argue that all of this is to some degree subjective because they're all human derived. This is a human morality, obviously. But if we could actually agree on those fundamental principles, that my body, my choice, that I have sovereignty over my life. I have a very limited span of time in which I can be here. It makes no sense that someone else gets to decide what that life is or where it should go, or that my life should be devoted to making someone else's life better. Like, that is slavery. And obviously for the reasons of the basic moral principle that I own my life and you own your life and I own my body, etc., etc., it's very easy to come to the conclusion that we shouldn't be doing certain things to each other. And we can do it universally. If I can own my body and you can own your body at the exact same time, we don't get in each other's way by having control over our own lives. Now, positive rights, this positivism that we have a right to something in the world, not to having someone leave us to something that we are born with and we naturally have, but that someone must give us something, like the right to a quote-unquote fair salary, which as soon as you start talking about a quote-unquote fair salary, you've immediately entered into the realm of it is impossible for us to ever come to a concrete agreement or consensus over what is a fair salary. It is absolutely 100% relative. You could very easily make a case that some of the poorest people in the United States are unfairly wealthier than some of the poorest people elsewhere in the world. And then the very incentive to make this argument is from essentially jealousy or hate for someone who has more than you, or that you see somebody who is well off and somebody who is bad off, and all you can do is say, oh, this person is bad off because of this person that is well off. It is inherently divisive and something that cannot have a base consensus. It is only because the other person is well off that the person who is bad off can be seen as bad off. If you compare that bad off person to somebody who is worse off, well, then is it still that the bad off person should pay for and or have their life cut in half for the person who's worse off? Like, again, it is all relative. And anything but consistent or something with a solid foundation to actually revert back to in the case of conflict. It instead becomes this huge subjective look at me sort of disagreement over whose situation is worse and whose fault it is other than our own. And this, the same thing goes for anything that is positive, anything that you don't naturally have that you quote-unquote want as a right, the right to a free education, the right to a good health care, or the right to a fair salary, or the right to clean water. These things we definitely want, and we should be able to provide them, but they are not a right. You are not entitled to them. If nobody has them, there's nothing we can do about it other than try to make clean water. That is the purpose of the market, to make our lives, which we have ownership over, as good as possible, as much better as we can possibly make them. And we do that through voluntary agreements, through trade and cooperation, based on not violating the basic rights of each other. And that actually provides the incentives to make things better. But as soon as you start saying, I have a right to healthcare, you do two fundamental, huge mistakes. One is that you cannot all have it at once. Someone has to be the healthcare provider and someone has to be the healthcare recipient, which means that you are requiring that someone else do something for you without repayment, without voluntary agreement, that they must. And it doesn't matter if you've enslaved the doctor to provide you with healthcare, or you've enslaved the hospital to provide you with healthcare, or you've enslaved someone else to pay for the government, to pay for the hospital, to pay for the doctor to provide you with healthcare. It doesn't matter how many times removed it is. What you have done at the end of the day is you have enslaved someone for some portion of their day to make your life better rather than their own. You have eliminated the right to choose and the right to direct and own your life and your body as you see fit by quote-unquote giving the right to healthcare, which is contradictory to the very reason someone should have the right to healthcare. Why do we say someone should have healthcare? Because they should not just die haphazardly, that you would want to preserve someone's life, that you would want to preserve their body. But if we don't have the right to our own body, if we don't have the right to our life, by what possible reason does it matter that we have the right to healthcare? And understand there's a very big difference between the right to be able to get healthcare if you want it, to be able to trade for healthcare, and the right to have healthcare. For the exact same reason that there's a difference in the right to freedom of speech and the right to a smartphone. The smartphone may amplify freedom of speech. The smartphone may make your speech easier. It may be able to, you may be able to reach more people. And it just might be the best tool for the freedom of speech that exists. But that doesn't mean you have a right to a phone. You have a right to go get or trade for a phone if you want, and you have the right to freedom of speech. You have the right to speak your mind, to disagree, to speak your truth or your ideas into the world, and to offend someone or challenge them on their views or their truth or what they see as the way the world works, whatever it is. But to have a smartphone, it requires somebody else's life. It doesn't require someone else not infringing on yours, it requires someone else devoting their life to yours. You don't have a right to someone else designing and iterating and engineering and then creating this elaborate manufacturing process and getting all of these resources and putting it all together and making it work and modifying and then producing a phone and then giving it to you for free. You don't have a right to enslave all of these people for this purpose because it would help your freedom of speech. In the exact same way, you don't have a right to healthcare because you have a right to your life. Now, one of the most basic responses and extremely common responses that, you know, comes from this is that, oh, now you hate poor people. You want everyone to die who can't afford healthcare. And this is just, this is beyond absurd and dishonest. Again, the very reason for rights is to avoid conflict. And to avoid conflict and to incentivize cooperation is exactly how you better as many lives as possible, as broadly as possible. And particularly in something like healthcare, that is where all of our failures are. 70 cents on every dollar in healthcare is directed by the government. The customer and the service provider are as disconnected as they could be from any other market. Probably the only, and I'm talking about US as the example here, just because, you know, that's where I live. That's usually the common scapegoat for, you know, terrible healthcare. Or at least ridiculously expensive healthcare, and all poor people are going to die because they can't afford it. A, making it a quote-unquote right doesn't fix this in the least, and B, it's a problem of the government trying to quote-unquote make it affordable for everybody for 100 years and failing over and over and over again. Again, the government is already the dominant mover of money in healthcare. If there is a problem of price, well, then it is 70% the government's fault. At minimum, because they are 70% of every dollar that moves. But that's a whole different discussion for a whole different day. But the simple truth is that giving someone a quote-unquote right to health care, a right to a fair salary, a right to clean water, does not in the least guarantee that they have good health care, that they have a high standard of living, or that they have clean water always available to them. In fact, it instills and excuses the very political institutions and systems that obliterate markets. So if we can at least be honest with the discussion that the entire point of this is to provide as many people as possible with these goods, with these critical, life-saving, extremely important goods and services. That's the point of setting up a system of rights, is because that is the system that best provides for everyone inside of it. It would be great if it was as simple as everyone should have water and we will beat anyone up who does not provide someone with water, and that just worked. But it doesn't. And you know, an interesting way to illustrate this, actually, from the context of how it is obviously, healthcare in particular is such a huge, diverse, broad industry of things. We're talking about from the most basic things like, you know, just like cold and flu medicine or a Band-Aid or, you know, fixing a broken bone or something that's been around for a long time, to the most, it's like some of the craziest, most expensive and most advanced technology available to us. Healthcare is a massive, massive industry. To claim that there is a right to this thing is just silly in a lot of ways. And going to an extreme, just going to the extreme of what is even available is the best way to illustrate this. And I, you know, try to do this a lot with like kind of the economics ideas, is that using like the small and highly available and, you know, uncontroversial things as an example just kind of confuses the issue. But if you go to the extreme, it becomes so clear why it's simply impossible for this to be the case. So let's say that tomorrow somebody develops some machine, some huge, like this crazy advanced biomechanical system that can actually replace like 5 or 6 organs all in one. It's this like all in one thing that's the most advanced piece of technology on the planet. It requires labor and engineering and design and specific to every possible patient that it could be used in. Like, it's not even universal. You can't like just print these out and it works for everybody. Every single thing has to be completely perfectly tailored and to the patient that would get it. And it takes unbelievable testing and study and iteration to find out how to design it for each of these things. And this thing costs $100 billion to produce. It uses the labor of 100,000 different people just to produce one. And it takes like a year of their labor, whatever it is. And this has just been developed. It came out today. Now there's a patient who needs it to survive. They've just gotten a horrible car accident, or they had some horrible disease that ate away at all their organs. Do they have a right to this brand new, didn't exist yesterday technology that requires the labor and work and dedication of tens of thousands of people for massive amounts of time? How could they possibly? How could you have a right to something that doesn't yet exist? Wouldn't it also mean that you have a right to anything that is invented in the future, that is anything related to keeping people alive? And what if any technology in that way necessarily is going to save thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of new lives? How far do you go? How far do you pretend there is no cost to this? I mean, you have 1,000 patients in that situation with that cost, and you've already enslaved the entire world for the next 30 years just to provide this machine. Entire lives are now devoted to this other person's life, and there's nothing they can do. If we have, quote unquote, the right for the government to enforce us to make this for them, Now, we can obviously see this is an extreme, and, you know, everybody would be like, oh, well, that's ridiculous. They would never do this. But the question is, why? What logical foundation do we have to claim, outside of just some subjective reasoning that, oh, that sounds ridiculous, how could we possibly say if people have the right, quote unquote, to healthcare, that this is not included? And obviously, this is mutually exclusive. Like, there's no possible way that everyone could have a right to this machine at once, because we don't even have the resources to produce it for everyone. So let's say if you consumed all of the world's resources, you know, what did I say, it's $100 billion or something like that. And let's say there's, I think it's like $70 trillion worth of value. So that's 700 of them. We can make 700 of them by basically completely selling off and like consuming all of the value of the entirety of the United States. We can only produce 700 of these machines. So what about patient 701? What about if one of the engineers that's forced to work on this for 20 years of their life to produce for one of the other ones then needs it? How can everybody have the universal right to this machine if only 700 could ever have it, and it takes the entire consumption of everyone's life, everyone's labor, everyone's skills, and everyone's resources, and every minute of every day just to make 700 of them? What we want is a market that has clearly defined and as objective as possible rules for working with each other, so that the market is as efficient and cooperative as possible, so that we can figure out the best ways to get these innovations and technologies to people as possible, so that the customer and the service provider, or the consumer and the business and the production of a good are as connected as possible. But that requires universal rules. As soon as we start getting into subjective, contradictory sets of quote-unquote rights, we just start putting our entire lives into this political space where the person who screams the loudest or the hardest is the one who gets their way at the expense of some other person. And I think one of the best examples to show why a right to one thing is in fact a right to a positive thing is almost always a loss of one of the more basic rights is the right to a fair salary. We have the right to choose, right? We have the right to decide for our lives and to pick the products and the services and work with people that we want to work with. Like, we recognize, obviously, that the government cannot say everyone has to buy an iPhone. I have the right to buy an Android. I have the right to buy, you know, an LG phone or whatever service or company or whatever. Maybe I want to buy one of the super secure Linux or Graphene OS phones, you know, whatever it is. I have that choice. It's my life. It's my resources. I have dedicated my blood, sweat, and tears to that. I'm going to use it with a product or a service or another person to whom I want to better my life the most. It's my responsibility. It's my life and resources. It's my choice. For that right to be universal, then an employer necessarily has the right to pay anything that an employee will agree to. They do not have to pay for product A, which is labor at whatever price, if someone is offering it at a different price. That is the exact same right. And an even more explicit flip side to this is your right to refuse the job. The right for an employer to make an agreement with someone for $30,000 a year when somebody else politically decides that $38,000 is the fair wage is exactly the same right as you turning down a $30,000 one to go find a $38,000 one. Everyone is always a buyer and a seller. If the seller doesn't have the right to turn down an agreement that they don't think is fair, neither then does the buyer. As soon as there's a political system that decides for us, it's all gone. It's no longer a right. It's something that the political system allows us to do at any particular time that they choose to allow it. And you can see this super easy by just looking at a kind of a micro version of the relationship. Like, just look at Fiverr. I'm technically hiring an employee at Fiverr. If one person is offering a project, like, they put up their prices, right? They decide whether or not they want to take on the job at whatever price. If somebody's offering a graphic design at $50 for a project and somebody else offers it at $10, I don't have to do the $50 one because it's a quote-unquote more fair wage. They're both perfectly fair because the buyer, the seller is the one that put up the price. I'm not obligated to pick the more expensive one. I mean, how silly is that? I may because I want, you know, something that I perceive as higher quality, or I want someone who, you know, might speak my language better. You know, who knows? Like, I've had or worked with people on Fiverr that had a hard time communicating. And, you know, because they're, you know, in the Philippines or in India or something somewhere. So we don't naturally speak the same language and we kind of got a language barrier. But that's the cost of doing the $5 option versus the $30 one. But again, it's my choice. It's my funds. It is my life. It's my Bitcoin, you know, whatever it is. Like, I have the right to choose. So how does Bitcoin fit into this? And this is where I was talking about at the beginning that Bitcoin is actually a great way to illustrate what is a right versus what is a want or a need or whatever, because Bitcoin has actually something that defends natural rights. And we can see this because it applies them universally. It is based on some of the natural restrictions and differences between people. By the nature of the inherent nature of privacy, like that's what the private and public key system are, is that as long as you can keep a secret, as long as you can maintain the privacy that you have by default, if you can secure that, well, then from that, you can base a set of property rights. You can create a set of voluntary exchange rights. And it only works in Bitcoin because there is no subjectivity. Everyone has the exact same set of rules applying to them at all times. To say that someone has a right to like some explicit salary or to healthcare or to water or food or housing or, you know, anything that we may need or really want in order to better our lives, to provide any of those in the Bitcoin context specifically requires the violation of a Bitcoin set of rules. Necessarily in Bitcoin, no one has the right to special Bitcoin. There is nothing in Bitcoin that says everybody should have at least one Bitcoin. Instead, it creates a universal set of rules and freely allows anyone to play who wants to participate. It is free access. Equal rights, equal treatment, equal responsibility, and equal claim over property within the Bitcoin system. No matter how much anyone, you know, cries or screams, or how much this political system wishes it to be so, that, you know, this person really needs some Bitcoin, or that it should go to this specific address, or that somebody should command these resources that they didn't specifically produce or trade for, or that are owned by some other person within the system, the Bitcoin system itself cannot discriminate. The rules are consistent for everyone. There's no universal basic income in Bitcoin. And the only way to get it, the only way to get someone else's resources or someone else's keys to their Bitcoin, is external to the rules of Bitcoin. Basically, the, you know, $5 wrench attack or to steal. You know, you have to violate someone else's individual person. You have to hurt them. You have to steal from them. You have to trick them. You have to break into their property so that they can either give up or lose, or you can take the keys to their Bitcoin. But that's the only way. Within the architecture of the system, there is no option for this, and this is critical. This is critical to why it works in an adversarial environment. And I promise you, political systems are adversarial environments. And that's the novelty of Bitcoin. That's what makes Bitcoin revolutionary, is that it is a system. This brings me back to Hasu's piece that we've read a million years ago now, of Bitcoin is the promise of independent property rights, which is one of the most fascinating ideas of what this system is and why it is, what it competes with. It competes with the judicial system, with the financial system, and the political system as the final arbiter for who owns what. Bitcoin is a system that defines and protects property rights within its own context, and it is derived from the natural ability to keep information private by simply not telling anybody. No one has a right to information that you know and haven't told anybody, and this is obvious because they inherently just don't know it. If they had a right to it, well, then they would have it unless someone took it from them, but they don't. They don't have it unless you give it to them. Again, back to the idea of what a right is. A right is something that you have and someone else does not have the right to take from you, not something that you want or need that someone has to give to you. That is how we know these positive things, these goods that someone else has to spend their life or their production or their skill or whatever to produce, is not a right. It's something that you have the right to trade for, because both of you have the right to freely decide to do with your lives what you wish, or to enter into any contract that you want with each other, because you own yourselves, you own your time, you own your mind and the products of it. But you don't own any of those things from someone else. You don't own anyone else's. You own yours. So earlier, it's talking about Bitcoin as a system of rights. This is why it works. Because the system itself is universal and independent and decentralized, because there is no center. So I talked about why the destruction of these basic rights, the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to choose for yourself, to own your own body, that the destruction of these things by creating positive rights eventually destroys the ability for the market to provide these services or goods at all. Now, this is something that's not obvious to a lot of people, and because it's something that takes such a long time to play out in the corruption or the failure of the political system, it's hard to analogize, but that's where Bitcoin is actually really profound. Like, when you start to understand why Bitcoin works and where we know it would fail and under what context, people don't think of political systems the same way, but they are. They are extremely similar to what Bitcoin is. A political system is just a network, a set of rules that everyone has to abide by in order to work together. Fundamentally, a government is a centralized network that defines the boundaries with which we are able to interact with each other. It's how we organize people. And the same principle that makes Bitcoin successful is the one that makes basic individual rights a successful form of political system. It's the same reason that Bitcoin would fail if those rules in the fundamental property rights within Bitcoin were made alterable and subjective. Like, it's obvious we agree that it's a terrible or stupid thing that there should be an Ethereum foundation that just changes the rules or decides who owns what. Like, we understand that that is a thing that would eventually kill Ethereum or make Ethereum unable to compete with Bitcoin. This is true of political systems too. They will eventually fail when the rules of or the rights of its people become alterable or subjective. They become a consequence of some authority somewhere. A political system that claims people have the right to something that another person should give them or has to give them, some specific service that's provided or good provided by another person, whatever it is, it fails eventually for the same reason that Bitcoin would fail if certain addresses had special permissions, or if there was some sort of a foundation with master keys that could pick which high balance accounts were required to pay coins to which low balance accounts, or where, maybe certain people had to require, this foundation was required to sign in order for them to spend money, that they could freeze accounts or that they could just confiscate or lock up money indefinitely while others didn't. It would obviously fall victim to corruption, to ambiguity in the rules, and eventually just a complete authoritarian system. It would be no different than the current financial system. The system would necessarily fall victim to an adversary or corruption eventually, because there was no foundation to independently define what the rights were. The quote-unquote rights of one individual came at the expense of the rights of another. As soon as you have some sort of a foundation that can decide this address with too many bitcoins must pay this address with no bitcoins or with very few bitcoins, neither one of them has the right to anything. Neither one of them can own anything within this system. Property rights are now just completely subject to the definitions or the perceived emotional fairness based on this foundation. The foundation is the only one that has rights or control over anything. Rights are gone the second you say someone has a right to someone else's Bitcoin. And of course, put it in the rules that that's possible. You've just centralized everything. You've made it all completely ambiguous. And the exact same things happen in political systems. As soon as you just start making the Constitution or individual rights mean whatever you want it to mean, or that the right to property is just when you don't have too much property, which, what the hell does too much mean? Nobody's going to ever agree on what too much is. It's a completely ambiguous, arbitrary term. It means nothing except what the individual decides. One person says it's too much to have two whole sandwiches. The other person says it's too much to have $1 billion. How do you say that the person who says two sandwiches is too much is wrong and the person who says $1 billion is right? You can derive no universal truths from it. There's no way to have consensus. It's just a political fight, and whoever has the most behind them screaming, or actually it just turns into who can play the dirtiest, who's the most evil and has the least moral barrier to enforce what they think is the correct way. So those things are not rights. A thing that must come from someone else is not a right, and to try to enforce that is the explicit revocation of all rights and its replacement with politically decided equity, a subjective definition of what we feel is fair between parties in question based on whole realms of knowledge that we cannot know. All we get is these silly narratives between, you know, who is in need and who has too much, all to be authoritatively enforced by some controlling power. And there is one eventual outcome. No matter if it seems to work temporarily or partially, it destroys the foundation that makes the market for providing these goods and services possible. We need individual universal rights, treatment and property rights in a political system, for the same reason that we cannot lose universal and equal access and ownership in Bitcoin. For the same reason that if we instilled some foundation with the master keys to decide who really needed Bitcoin and who had too much and which addresses were good and which addresses were bad, that we know Bitcoin would fail, and that we know and see that altcoins and shitcoins become horrible scams, become all just about, you know, the people in control and them having their huge share and them getting their families and their cronies and everybody who they talk to. We see this corruption and the failure of these systems in real time at 1,000 times the pace, and with all the incentives out clear and in the open in altcoins and all of these other scams. The reason they work that way is because they are politically decided sets of rules. And it's so clear if you look at our political system that that's the exact same thing that has happened. That They've just enriched themselves. They've made rules that benefit themselves. They see themselves as more important. And, you know, you got to have a developer fund, right? You got to pay the banks. You got to make sure that the banking system stays alive. A bailout is a necessity. How else will we keep the system working if the important people aren't given funds? Just like the Bcash fork that everybody's on about. If we don't have a developer tax, how are we going to keep this project alive? The rules become political, and the system ends up having masters. Now, the consequences of doing this in Bitcoin are just more obvious, and they would play out a whole lot faster. And we can see, you know, if you start to understand how this system works and what it means to be, you know, immune to adversaries, or to accept that this is something that adversaries will necessarily be, when you start to understand the value of Bitcoin, you realize, you know, that instituting subjective rules, instituting rules that apply to one address and not others, is laying the seeds for destruction of the entire system. It's obvious. It's far more obvious simply because it doesn't take as long. It's in an open environment, and Bitcoin is still very small, and we know it's more explicit what the value of the thing is. But it is the exact same nature, has the exact same consequences, and has the exact same set of incentives as our political networks. For the same reason we know Bitcoin would fail is the same reason political systems fail when they institutionalize a means of violating fundamental rights in order to give people things that we feel we really want or need. We start out thinking that we're splitting some enormous pool of resources more fairly and end up destroying the very resources we are trying to distribute. Rather than being equally wealthy, which was the intent, we all become equally destitute and subject to this huge authority we created to, quote, fairly distribute everything, which just ended up with them getting incredibly rich and everyone else getting poor. Okay, that'll wrap us up. I've ranted long enough. hopefully that wasn't too obnoxious or preachy. But it's just a really important topic, I think, and I'm just surprised that I still find so many people that do not understand or think about rights in this context, and think that if you say someone doesn't have a right to a sandwich, that means you want everybody to starve. And I just think that's, you know, ridiculous. There are an infinity number of things that we would like to have and that would be great to have. That does not make them rights. Maybe this is a good foundation to understand that. Hopefully the analogy came across. Let me know if it didn't. If you want to argue with me about it, feel free. Hit me up. I'm on Twitter. I'm everywhere. I'm sure you'll be able to rope me into it really easily. We can go at it. It's a fun topic, and I also just think it's really interesting to think about the incentives of these systems as networks and how they fail. And I really think it. I don't think it's like arbitrary. I think it's fascinating the way that Bitcoin actually illustrates why the incentives make the system fall apart. And I think it's a great analogy for our political systems and our political networks. So with that, a final thank you to the amazing supporters of this show. Hexa Wallet is a great non-custodial Bitcoin only wallet, and they don't even take any information. You're not gonna, you know, have to send them your email or your name or anything like that. You just set up a wallet, and they've got a really fascinating seedless backup where they split it into five pieces and distribute it among, you know, your iCloud, your contacts that you want to trust, and your other devices and that sort of thing. And you only need three to restore your wallet in the case of a lost phone or something like that. Check them out at hexawallet.io or Hexa Wallet on the Google Play or App Store. It's a great one to check out. And if you do, make sure to add me as a contact. Thanks again to the crew over at Hexa, building some awesome stuff. All right, we got some great reads coming next week. I may actually release one over the weekend just because there's one I'm already working on, and tons of fun with some new episodes. I hope you guys really enjoyed Shitcoin Insider from yesterday. I had a lot of fun with that show and I would like to continue it. But I want your guys' feedback. Let me know if you want to hear more of it. And of course, subscribe so you don't miss the new episodes. There won't be any more in this feed. This will be strictly Bitcoin Audible, and Shitcoin Insider is a new show. Now, if you want to support the show, you can always share it out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin space. But if you're looking for a great place to learn Austrian economics, a resource that I've been using for years is Liberty Classroom. And I just started doing their affiliate stuff going, holy crap, I can't believe I haven't been promoting this. It's Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom. And go through my affiliate link at guyswan.com/liberty. And it'll take you right there and you'll also be supporting the show. But it is a wonderful resource. I've used it to learn all kinds of crap about economics. And I just highly, highly recommend it if you want to really dig into this stuff. So guyswan.com/liberty. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I am out for today. Don't forget to subscribe and I'll catch you back next week on Bitcoin Audible. Till next time, guys, take it easy. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.